Chanel here. Welcome to Menopause Nutritionist. I believe women can thrive in menopause and have the body composition of their choice if they master their nutrition and lifestyle. Today I am having a chat with Sarah about a very important topic that I talk quite a bit about on the menopause journey, and that is alcohol. Unfortunately, alcohol doesn't really serve us very well, and this is a great conversation because I don't have a big story around alcohol myself, and we talk a bit about that today. So enjoy this episode with Sarah, and I hope you find lots of value in it. Hey, Sarah. Well, I am so excited to do this podcast with you today because this is a topic that is very important. And I mean, it's important for everyone, but for my menopausal tribe, I feel like this is something that just keeps coming up time and time again, not only when I'm talking to my one-on-one clients, but my group program people and just generally, like people reaching out, having trouble with alcohol or alcohol being an issue. So I'm super excited to talk to Sarah today. She's like a women's health and wellness coach, also a gray area drinking coach. She can tell us a bit more about that. She's got a book out. So maybe, Sarah, you can start with actually giving us a bit of background about your story. I mean, and then we'll probably bounce around from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, perfect. So I grew up in England, started drinking at 14, which was kind of what we all did back then. I remember, like, for me, looking back on my drinking and what I got from it at that age was I'd moved school and moved country quite a lot as a kid. And so you're often growing up with that feeling of, you know, trying to fit in, trying to get people to like you, trying to be one of the crowd, you know. And the thing I remember from noticing how it felt to drink alcohol was all those barriers seemed to come down. It was kind of like, now I felt like I belonged. I felt like I fitted in. You know, when you're pissed and someone's like, "You're my best friend, I love you." That was like to Sarah, who was kind of just trying to make friends and get settled into this new school. It was like, this is what I need. Alcohol is fabulous. So I'd grown up in a house where alcohol was very present. I'm 48 tomorrow, actually. So, like, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And mum and dad were very social. They had lots of dinner parties, and little Sarah growing up was like, that's what adults do to have a good time. They drink alcohol, because I associated alcohol with seeing my parents laughing a lot, seeing them having fun with all their friends. So we make that assumption at a very young age that that's what you do to have fun and socialize as an adult. So fast forward a few years and, you know, university, which is obviously a very big drinking culture, and then moved straight to London from university where, you know, this was the late 90s. My first job was working in recruitment, and the fourth stage of the interview process was going to the pub to do shots of tequila to see how well I could handle my booze. Which kind of says a lot about, but that was pretty normal. Like, that was just like, you know, working in investment banking, recruitment in the city, you were doing a lot of wining and dining with clients. It was quite alcohol fueled. And so needless to say, I passed with flying colors. This was an era where, you know, the Spice Girls were very present. It was Sex and the City. It was female empowerment, girl power. We can match the lads pint for pint down the pub. We don't need to rely on anyone because we're earning our own money. We can go and drink cosmopolitans and have one night stands and channel our inner Samantha Jones and do all of those things. And that was the era that we were living in. And I definitely lapped it up and was kind of like a big drinker, but not, it was never problematic to me. Like, I never really suffered from hangovers. I never really, of course, there was a few, you know, random nights where you're like, shit, yeah, what happened last night? Like, who was that guy? But not too many of those. And then I went traveling. I met my husband, who's also he's a Kiwi. And I met him while we were backpacking in Australia. And we went back to London. And again, just like that whole work hard, play hard. And for me, the drinking changed after we had kids. So we moved from Australia to, from the UK to Australia in 2010. I had one baby in tow. I was pregnant with another. And very soon I had two under two at home, very homesick, very confused, because I really wanted to have kids, but I was really struggling and felt a level of shame that I was struggling because on paper, I had it all. I'd moved to Australia, I had sunshine and the beach, and I didn't have to work because we'd saved enough money and I could look after the kids while my husband was setting up a business. But inside, I was absolutely dying. Like, I was so homesick. I was so lonely. I'd gone from having this really high-flying, successful career. I had lots of friends. I was wining and dining clients in restaurants all over London and New York and doing all of that. And all of a sudden, I was in Perth, cleaning up baby sick, pureeing carrot, going to monkey music, desperately homesick, trying to find my tribe of friends, but really struggling because alcohol had been my tool for helping me to make friends. And of course, you're not going out getting pissed all the time when you've got two young kids.
Yes.
So I felt quite isolated. And that's when I started to drink at home on my own. So that was when it wasn't with the kids. It was always like my husband would come home and then that I was looking forward to drinking. It wasn't a take it or leave it. That was when my need for alcohol became a solution to making all those horrible feelings go away, because that's the thing about alcohol, it's really good in the short term at
Yes.
making us not have to feel the feelings that we don't want to feel.
Yes.
And initially that worked. But the problem with alcohol is, number one, it's highly addictive. Number two, we build tolerance to it.
Yes.
So we start to need more and more. What had started as maybe two glasses was suddenly becoming three quarters of a bottle. And then sometimes it was the bottle. And then as I was aging, alcohol was starting to impact me more because that's the way it works. And, you know, all the research I've done now into a woman's physiology, why we can't metabolize alcohol in the same way as men, and why that changes as well after the age of 40. So for me, anxiety started to increase every time I drank. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep through the night after I drank. I was waking up very anxious, utterly exhausted, full of self-loathing and regret because the previous morning I'd woken up saying, right, I'm not going to drink tonight. But by 5 o'clock, that's what I'd been doing. And I was just stuck in this cycle of just like trying to not wanting to drink, but equally having nothing else in my toolkit to support me. And by this point, I was running a business. I was, you know, the kids were getting older and everything like that. And then a few things happened. This was 2017 that led to me going, I need to take a break. I'd had a fall, an accident at a party when I was drunk. I'd fallen over. I landed on my face. I cut my lip open. And you know, just those things where you're just like, I'm a freaking 41-year-old woman, and this is not cool. Like, that might be okay when you're 21, but it's not when you're 41. So I thought, right, I'll take a break from alcohol. I'll do a 21-day detox because they say it takes 21 days to change a habit. Because in my mind, I didn't have a problem because I didn't drink in the morning. I didn't drink every day. I wasn't staying in bed hungover, vomiting all day. I was still running half marathons. I was still like very high functioning. So society tells us we've only got a problem if we can tick all those other boxes. So I was like, I don't have a problem. I've just got a bad habit. I just need to break that habit. So I thought I'll do 21 days. So I got to the 21 days and I was like, wow, this is what it's like to wake up feeling energized in the morning, not feeling utterly shite after having had, like, you know, three quarters of a bottle of wine or whatever. My anxiety pretty much disappeared. I started to feel more positive. My self-talk started to improve because when you wake up in the morning feeling really proud of yourself, instead of the first thought being, well, you're a loser, like the everything that changes in your mindset. I went on to do 100 days.
Amazing.
And at the end of that 100 days, I reflected on, you know, like, loads of positives had come of this. I had my own recruitment business at the time, and I made more money in that 100 days than I'd made in the entire year the year before, because it turns out, you know, your productivity is through the roof when you get a solid 8 hours sleep and you start fulfilling your potential, right?
Your
But what
brain.
I, yeah, like your brain power, everything. But I was Sarah the party girl, and my whole identity was tied up in being Sarah the party girl. And friends were kind of like, oh, are you still not drinking? Or, you know, when are you going to be drinking? And it had never been something that I thought I would do forever. So I was like, okay, I've done 100 days. Now I'll be fixed. Now I'll be a normal, moderate drinker, and I'll go back to being someone that just has a glass of wine every now and then, and everything will be fine. And within 3 weeks, I was back to drinking the same amount as before because that's how it is for grey area drinkers. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a little while about grey area drinking. So I was surprised that my drinking had gone back to that level. But I didn't, and I had a niggle that was kind of going, this isn't good. But I was kind of powerless at that point, and it was like my brain and my body were wanting to make up for lost time for having had that 100 days off. It was like, okay, I can drink because I've had that break. And that cycle continued for 2 years, taking breaks, going back to drinking, trying to moderate, not being able to moderate, taking breaks again, until I just got so sick and tired of this cycle. And a friend pointed out to me, a sober friend, and she just said, everything in your life is better when you don't drink. You're a better mum, you show up better at work, you're happier, you feel better in yourself, you're proud of yourself. Why do you keep going back to the thing that takes all of that away from you? And it was a bit of a wake-up call, but it was also the moment that everything changed. And after that conversation, I set the date and I knew I was done. And I set the date for it was literally a month later, April 2019. So I'll be 5 years next month.
Amazing.
Had my last drink.
You must be very thankful to that person.
I am. I tell her all the time.
That's amazing. So maybe tell us a bit about the gray area drinking. You touched on it a little bit, like explain
Yeah.
to us what that is.
So up until recently, we've talked about someone's alcohol use as being they're an alcoholic or they're a social drinker.
Sure.
And we all think of an alcoholic as being what I described earlier, someone that drinks in the morning, someone that maybe is homeless and is drinking out of a brown paper bag, hard spirits,
Yes.
someone maybe they've lost their job, their home, their relationship, and they're at that point, they're waking with the shakes and they need to drink all the time. And what we now know, and in the medical field, what they do now to talk about someone's alcohol use is they call it alcohol use disorder as being mild, moderate, or severe. So
Right.
severe would be what we would call a physically dependent person on alcohol who needs to have medical support to safely withdraw from alcohol because alcohol is one of only three substances that the human body can die from withdrawal from.
Right.
So grey area drinking, we think about a scale of 1 to 10, one being someone who doesn't drink, or maybe someone that has a glass of champagne at a wedding once a year and that's their drinking. 10 being that person that I've just described who wakes with the shakes and needs medical support to detox. Grey area drinking describes people, in my view, it's about a 4 to an 8 on that scale. So we've
Right.
passed the point of being a take it or leave it drinker. We've got to the point where we're using alcohol for something, whether it's for most of the women that I coach, they're midlife, and most women, they're using alcohol for stress. They're using it to unwind. They see it as a reward at the end of a really busy, overwhelming day. They use it to block out uncomfortable emotions. So whenever they feel sad, maybe there's something going on in their lives that they don't want to face. So they
Yes.
just drink to not have to face that thing.
Yes.
If we've got to that point, we're starting to get into that grey area.
Right.
And it's estimated that 3 billion people across the world sit in the grey area.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. And up until recently, until this work, Jolene Park, who coined the term grey area drinking in the States, has just been incredible in this movement because it gives people an understanding of where they sit. Because I didn't know what I was. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't drink every day. I knew I wasn't that, but I also knew that I wasn't like my friend that just had a drink every now and then. So what was I? And grey area drinking, I found to be a really helpful understanding of that term. And then it was interesting because I did an interview with Mamma Mia and I explained grey area drinking, and 8,000 women emailed me within 24 hours. It was a busy day. And every single one of them said, you've just told my story.
Yes, and this is why it was, so great that we could chat because talking about alcohol, it's never been. I'm one of those people that literally, it's like if you told me I could never drink again, I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Like, in saying that, I will have a social drink, but I generally don't drink. Like, it's just not my husband loves to pair wine with food, like, doesn't matter to me. Like, I just really don't care about it. So, I know the effects it has. Not only obviously my, tribe is kind of midlife menopausal like yours, in the same age bracket, we find it a real issue because, like you said, we're using it for stress at the end of the day. Obviously, when menopause symptoms kick in, they can be overwhelming. And then you're trying to manage them with alcohol, and it's actually doing the worst. It's making
Totally.
it so much worse. You're not going to sleep well. Like all of the things, alcohol doesn't do anything good for you. So I'm always the bearer of bad news when I speak about it because I'm like, I want to tell you it does something good. It just doesn't. It just, there's nothing good that it does for you, you know? So when then we can hear your story, because I can't give you a story because I don't have one. Like I haven't had to break up with alcohol because it's just not been a thing for me. But you know, it sugar, different story. Like I had to break up with sugar. So, you know, so hearing your story, I think it's really powerful and I'm excited to put this out and share it because I know working with women like you do, a lot of people are in this gray area. And I love that you've explained it because they'll hear themselves in this conversation and realize that they need to do something about it.
And that's the thing, I think that you don't. Everyone will ask me the question, how much were you drinking? And I'm like, it's not about a number. It's not
No.
about a number. It's about a feeling. And
Yeah.
if we notice that alcohol is starting to take more than it's giving, if we've got to that point where, so for me, every time I drank, I would wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning, I would have anxiety and I would have hot sweats. So, and this was a really clear sign that I had a problem with alcohol, was my way of dealing with that was not to stop drinking. It was to take a sleeping tablet with the alcohol to override the 3 a.m. wake up.
That's it.
But you can imagine what I felt like at 6 a.m. when I'd had, most of a bottle of wine and a sleeping tablet. But I never felt bad enough that I would be in bed. I'd never felt bad enough that I had to like cancel work or anything. But it meant that I was spending most days at about a 5 out of 10. And I didn't know that that was a 5 out of 10 because I thought that was as good as it got, because that's how most of my life had been. And it was only in the removal of alcohol, and that's why I encourage women to take a break and just notice what feels different. It was only in that removal that I got that real information and that data of going, wow, that is what, that's what the difference is. Actually, this is what it's like to feel 8 out of 10. This is what it's like to wake up every day having had 8 hours sleep. This is what it's like to wake up feeling with less anxiety. And now, it's not to say that removing alcohol is this like magic pill and it's all rainbows and unicorns and everything is wonderful. Life is still life, but never underestimate the impact that it's having on your physical and mental health.
So would that be your advice, like to, because so many people are going to be listening to this, would that be your advice, like actually just give yourself a break and see how you feel? Like what is your advice for people listening and maybe they're listening going, I think she just described me. Like what should I do now?
Yeah. So let me run through the signs of being a gray area drinker. So the key kind of checklist signs that I have are, you make rules around your drinking, but you're often breaking them, because people that don't, you wouldn't make rules around your drinking. You would just have a drink when you felt like it and not when you don't. People that are in that gray area, they start going, right, I'm not going to drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I can have a drink on a Thursday, but only if it's out. I'm not allowed to drink at home on my own. And I definitely can't drink white wine on an empty stomach. And now it's Wednesday, and I'm not supposed to drink on a Wednesday, but maybe I could have one because I'm not at home. And then I just won't drink tomorrow. And there's just this constant chatter that is going on around this negotiation and this justification around, can I drink? Second sign is we're often drinking more than we intend to. So we're always like, oh, I'm just going to have one. And then it never is just one. Third sign, people don't think that we've got a problem with alcohol. Nobody said to me, you have got a problem with alcohol. But inside, we're noticing our body's not metabolizing it in the same way anymore. It is having an impact. Like that anxiety can last for a couple of days after a big drinking session. Like we're starting to notice the negative impacts, but yet we still struggle to make a change. Like it's got this hold on us. Like if someone was to say to us, oh, I think you should take a couple of months off alcohol, then, and if the first thought is, I can't do that, then we definitely need to.
Of course, you've got your book. So people could start with reading a book as well.
Yeah. So my book is aimed at midlife women. I
Okay.
talk a lot about menopause in there. I talk a lot
Great.
about why women are using alcohol so much at this stage in their lives. And I give loads of tips and strategies because it's not about just taking alcohol out. We've got to look at what we add in. If we're drinking alcohol because we're stressed, we've got to find other things that we're using to manage that stress, or it's only a matter of time before we go back to drinking. And I've got loads of
Yes.
practical tools and tips in the book. And then going back to your question on what should women do, I say, give yourselves 30 or 60 days off alcohol. I run women's alcohol-free challenges 4 times a year, and that's a great place to come and do it with a community of other women. So you're not on your own, white-knuckling it, counting down the days, but you're actually getting information and tools that are going to change your mindset around alcohol. And then with that break, it's not about saying forever. It's about saying, I'm going to take a break and I'm going to reflect on how do I feel mentally? How do I feel physically? What are my relationships like? How am I parenting my kids? Am I calmer? Like all of these things, we can start to get information to work out what role does alcohol actually have in our life right now.
Love that. And when is your next challenge?
It will start on the 14th of April.
Okay, perfect. So this is great. We're getting in front of it. So anyone listening in, you can join and we'll put the links for the free challenge so they can sign up. Obviously, I'm going to be speaking on it about sugar. So this is obviously, was that your story as well, that sugar became an issue?
So you're in my sugar challenge. So I run alcohol challenges and sugar
Oh.
challenges. So
Oh,
you're coming into my,
challenge as well.
yeah. Well, the reason I do this is
Yes.
because most of my ladies, when they remove alcohol, they swap alcohol for sugar.
Yes, right.
And
Gotcha.
there's a couple of reasons for this. So number one is alcohol has fairly high sugar content, so the body is
Yes.
suddenly being deprived of that. But number two, the dopamine receptors in the brain are used to getting this
100%.
big fat hit of alcohol that lights them up. And then we're
100%.
not doing that anymore. And so we swap it for sugar. And so I talk so much about effort-based dopamine and needing to actually go and do the things that naturally start to increase our dopamine levels so that we're not feeling depleted and looking for the next quick hit.
Yes, definitely. Well, I'm right there with you on the sugar-free. So, and sugar does not help anyone in menopause. So, everyone listening in knows that already. I talk about sugar. It's one of the triggers by far. So, well, there you go. You've got the alcohol challenge and the sugar challenge. Two things that perfect. Amazing.
Yeah.
Your book. And of course, you've got a website. So there's lots of different ways that you can get in touch and start your journey. Like Sarah said, just have a break, give yourself a break, and then lean into the resources. Like try that no alcohol challenge. What other parting comments would you like to share?
Yeah, I guess my main message is you don't have to call yourself an alcoholic to decide to take a break from alcohol. Women, as we age, women actually have less of an enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase, ALDH, which is the enzyme that metabolizes and breaks down alcohol. We have less of it than men. So when a woman drinks, more alcohol enters her bloodstream than a man. For women, as we age, this enzyme starts to reduce even more, which is why our hangovers get worse as we age and why the impact of alcohol starts to affect us more. And this is why we are seeing women are more vulnerable and prone to the health risks of alcohol because we cannot metabolize it the same way as men, and more alcohol enters our bloodstream. So women we know are more vulnerable to liver disease, to heart disease, to the risks of cancer, and we know that now the direct link between alcohol and breast cancer. And so it's also about really understanding the female physiology. And while we were all raised in that era of I can match the lad's pint for pint down the pub, it actually is not about that because a woman's body cannot
No.
metabolize alcohol in the same way as a man. And I'm so passionate about sharing that because so few women know that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm so glad that you shared that for sure, because that's the thing, I think, and it's really frustrating as we age, because it becomes even more apparent how different men and women are. Not only obviously you've just stated with alcohol, but with food, with hormones, with all these different changes that are going on in our body. And we're living with our husbands, and we just cannot do the same things. You have to just stay in your lane and know that what they do is completely different. Like they're on a different path. So, and I think that can be frustrating.
Yeah.
Like and try and lose weight, their husbands just drop it really quickly, like that we don't, like all of these, it can be really frustrating. It's just not fair, and I think we don't talk about that enough so we can empathize with each other that actually that's a bit crap, so I get that as well. But thank you so much for your time today. It's been great having this chat. I know it'll help so many women, and hopefully lots of them will jump on the challenges and get even more help. So thanks for tuning in today and taking the time to talk.
Thanks for having me.
Hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did with Sarah today. It was so awesome and such a great insight. I just loved her story. So make sure you go follow her, go check out all the things that she provides. And if you are hearing yourself in this conversation today, then she has some great tools and strategies to be able to help you on your journey. And as always, I want to thank you for tuning in, putting yourself forward with your health and wellness journey and making yourself a priority. So I appreciate you. And if you are happy to leave a review, a rating, share, like, comment, that would be so amazing. This is how this podcast can reach more ears and help more people. And as always, I'm not ever gonna let you forget to join my wait list for the next round of the Thrive Program, because I would love to get to know you in person better and help you just absolutely conquer the things that you need to do to be the best person you can be. Feel your best, master your nutrition and lifestyle, and basically thrive in this period of your life. Until next time, have the best day.